start. Sooners of Oklahoma at 12-0 and still looking for respect nationwide.
What is going on, Sooner Nation? Thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Barry and Mac Show. As always, myself, Barry, personal trainer, sports performance coach out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and alongside me, former Sooner wide receiver, 2000 national champ, Mr. Damian Mackey. How are we doing today, D-Mac?
Man, doing well, Barry. Just excited to know the guys are in the middle of camp. A lot of competition happening. Word on the street is defense showed up a little bit more today and brought the hammer down a little more. Hey, want to give a shout out to Reggie. Word on the street is Reggie was filling that hole in the B gap and the C gap and was winning his fair share of battles. So salute to him. Man, football is right around the corner. I can smell it in the grass. Can't wait to get to September so we can, you know, get our guys in between those white lines.
Right around the corner, and OU's back in fall camp. They're in the full swing, which means schools are in the full swing, which means teachers are back at work. Massive shout out. I know D-Mac's out there in lovely California, but here in Oklahoma, we're still an awful, awful state when it comes to education. But massive shout out to the teachers that are vastly overworked and extremely underpaid. My wife being one of them, just the amount of effort, time, love, patience, compassion that they put into their jobs. Big shout out to all the teachers out there. D-Mac, did you have a teacher or a couple teachers in your, let's go grade school, that had a pretty big impact on you?
Definitely. Mr. Peruca was my math teacher. You know what I'm saying? He taught me math. He was the individual who made math make sense for me, and I was able to flourish after that. Hopefully, I was a few. You know, I was a math teacher for a couple of years, an econ teacher for a couple of years. I get reached out to by some of my students who are now adults, a lot of them. And, I try to put in a little work, you know what I'm saying, as an educator. But Mr. Peruca, shout out to him, Coach Webb. This is a legendary coach here from my high school. He's coached many Olympians and world champions and NCAA champions. And man, our track and field program was one of the very best in America for a long time. And a lot of that goes to him and his, his ability to coach. And that's probably it. Keep it 100 with you. That's probably it.
That's it. Man, shout out to Mrs. Wright. She was my DECA teacher. Do you know what DECA is? You ever heard of DECA? Did you guys have DECA Club when you were in school?
Nah, what does it stand for?
It stands for Distributive Education Clubs of America, which doesn't mean anything. So they actually, they make the joke that what it stands for is an Association of Marketing Students, which would be like, what, AAOMS, but that doesn't sound good.
Yeah.
It basically is a marketing club. I was specifically in the sports marketing club all 4 years of high school, man. It was a blast. Teacher was a big OU fan. So shout out Mrs. Liz Wright. Me and a buddy of mine would compete in these local competitions. We'd go and compete in state. And they'd give you cool things. So if you got any parents out there whose kids want a cool club to be involved in, highly recommend DECA. They would give you things like, hey, we've got a sports franchise that's, you know, 3 years in the red. They how did they get this thing out? Here's the numbers, here's the situation. And then you got to go in front of a board of like four or five people and basically pitch why you should be the owner, what you can do, how you would help that program or organization get back into the positive. So shout out to Mrs. Butterfield. So Stacy Butterfield, I hope that's still her name, second grade teacher, easily the most memorable teacher. I believe she actually became the superintendent for Jinx High School. So she
had a crush on her.
Big, oh my gosh. maybe
Butterfield,
maybe,
you had a crush on her.
Oh my God, get out of here. She's pretty well known in the this area, the Tulsa area. That's hilarious, man. Oh my gosh, there were a few. I wouldn't put her in that class, but there were a few. But man, folks did not come here for the teacher talk. Save that for another pod. They came here for the OU stuff. And as you said off the top, DMAC, OU is now 2 weeks into fall camp. We're hearing some stories of guys who are doing really well. And then hearing just, it's not really anything bad, so to speak, but just guys who maybe aren't being highlighted. And you wonder, you know, if you're not hearing any word on the street about those guys, are they really progressing? Have they made that jump? You know, you've got an ear to the ground in terms of fall camp. Obviously, we're posting over on Sooners 360, have a couple recent updates here in the past 4 days. Highly recommend everybody go check them out. But when it comes to fall camp, DMAC, and we're going to keep today primarily focused on the offensive side of the ball. I'm sure we'll go over on the defense at some point. But offensive side of the ball, offensive line has obviously been something that has really been a focus of the fans and obviously of the Sooner team to improve. And we've heard some positives there. But overall, what kind of sense are you getting from within the program as to where OU may or may not be improving on the offensive side of the ball?
Yeah, man. So really good reports thus far, Barry. Now, I will say this. Word on the street is that the defensive line dominated more in today's scrimmage, which is par for the course, right? What you want to do in order to have a successful camp is have some of those scrimmages where the defense is kicking butt and the offense needs to go back with a bloody nose and figure things out. And then on the next scrimmage, the offense needs to come back and retaliate. And that's how you build momentum on both sides. What you don't want is one side consistently dominating the other, because then no one's getting better. So good to hear that the defense had a good day today. But back to your initial question. When we think about the offensive line, I'd say since all those guys went, you know, Orlando Brown Jr. and the crew went pro 4 years ago, 5 years ago, however many years ago it was, the offensive line has been in question. Yeah, we had, you know, obviously one of the best centers in football, who's now a championship center for the KC Chiefs.
Yeah.
And we had the kid go out last year as a first rounder. We'll see how he does this year. But as a unit, I would say the offensive line has been kind of offensive, or at least inconsistent, right? Maybe they haven't been offensive, but they have been inconsistent. And so to have such positive insight coming out where, guys, I'm hearing things along the lines of Coach B believes, by the way, I'm speaking B to Bo, this is one of the very best lines he's had since he's been at OU.
Wow.
Since he's been at OU.
Interesting.
And that's a huge deal, because he's a Joe, you know, the Moore Award winner. He's won that top offensive line in America. And so, yeah, is it a couple times or just one?
Did he, no, he won I think it? 17 and 18. I think they won it in 17 okay. and 18. Yeah.
Well, here's what we know. We know he's had the best line in America before, I believe, Bake's senior year. And so that, for to hear him say that, it means he feels comfortable about his guys. If you remember our last conversation talking about the approach to dealing with talent, I said, hey, I think it's cool that BV is being kind of indirect, right? He's not really beating his chest about the talent versus last year. I think it is important for Bimbo to message directly so his guys hear his level of belief in them and really their ceiling. This line has a championship ceiling. I don't think the line will be the reason we don't go on and play for championships, whether that's conference, whether that's in the playoff, or, you know, however far we go. I think this is the first time, Barry, in a very long time, we've been able to say that. Solidified starters. You know, when you've got a returner at center plus somebody who's potentially better than him, it's really healthy for Rain to have that level of, you know, attention to detail every practice. But in that same vein, it's also really good to have established starters at tackle, right? So we're not having to rotate guys in and out. You've got Guyton on one side, you know, and it's like, yo, that bad boy is solidified. That right tackle position is taken care of. Bird is the rumors around our town is that Bird is doing things through the whistle, like to the very end of the whistle. He's looking for people to hunt down. You start to hear Rouse's name. And by the way, the kid from Cal, I always say his name wrong, so I'll always call him that. But a mainstay, a kid who stayed in the program, got stronger, got more comfortable, right? Has a better base and is a year older. That's how you build program depth, championship depth. And so when we talk O-line, I think this is a year where us as a fan base and in that building, the program, guys can stick their chest out and say, we got some dudes that can play with anybody and we have some depth. So I'm excited about the offensive line. I think this is going to be the first time in quite a few years that this will be a position group we can lean on. I think there will be times during the season where coach says, screw it. You know what? You know, the receivers are dropping balls or the weather is this or whatever, right? The game is in a position where it calls for us to just lean on the defense. And some of those defenses running that 3-3-5, trying to take away a lot of your short game and trying to, you know, take away the ability to attack teams in space. Just kind of give them a precursor to being an SEC team and just run downhill, lean on their guys. And let small, you know, let gravity and inertia. Ooh, how about that? Let inertia take its course and let bigger, more athletic guys dominate smaller, quicker guys.
Man, my video at this point about the offensive line is relatively infamous. If you guys haven't seen it, go check it out. It's over on the YouTube. But it was a comparison of bodies, of feet, of just the way guys were moving. And I think it was 2018, even versus, I believe it was 2019 or 20. And we've said it ad nauseum, but now you're seeing the product. Of course, you get, you know, Rouse and bring some guys in, and now you've recruited some talent in a guy like Caden Green. But at the end of the day, if your strength coach can make your unit, right? A lot of people don't necessarily always understand. It's not necessarily when you're a strength coach, and this was actually something that was kind of taught to me, or at least put in a frame where, oh man, that makes a whole lot of sense. The strength coach's job isn't necessarily to raise up a guy like an Adrian Peterson, right? To raise up a guy like, you know, name five-star, super talented stud. Your job there is to just not mess that up. Your job there is to not get him hurt, make sure there's a progression, make sure, you know, he's following kind of that linear fulfilling of potential that you want to see. The strength coach's job, DMAC, is to bring up that bottom 20%. If your bottom 20% is way better than everybody else's, and it's a 10 to 15% increase from the year before, you're going to have a better unit, right? Obviously, you want to improve guys like Rouse and, you know, your Caden Greens, who's a high-level draft pick, your Savion Birds, who look like a million bucks, who sound like they've got, you know, just serious tenacity about the game. But your goal is to improve the unit. The big-time guys get the focus, but if the unit gets better and the unit gets stronger, you're going to have a better position group within that football team. And there were prerequisite numbers. We heard it for, you know, a good amount of time. They're just basic numbers that guys weren't hitting, and we'll kind of keep it at that when it comes to certain lifts, when it comes to running, when it comes to some of the agility drills, to some of the change of direction stuff. And you've heard BV talk about it in relation to Gavin Freeman. OU and Coach Schmidt, you know that they use those metrics. They want to know what guys are doing, and it helps them better evaluate and self-scout who's going to be optimal for what position, right? If tackles historically under their program, under their tutelage, have done this, and then you got a guy you brought in who can't do that, maybe he needs to play guard, right? Maybe he just isn't going to make it there. But massively important to hear that the unit has really improved. You know, it sounds like Savion Bird, if he's as tenacious about this, I think we were talking about this in our little kind of buddy chat we got going on. How important Orlando Brown was to that 17 unit. And I think in 18, they might have lost a little bit of that edge, just a hair. It wasn't much, but you kind of felt it from the Bake squad to the Kyler squad. That slight little downtick in intensity, when you have one guy, and maybe you can kind of talk to this a little bit, who brings that, you know, you're not going to hit my quarterback and leave him on the ground. You're not going to, you know, willy-nilly take this, you know, guy for a ride out of bounds or whatever, commit said personal foul, do whatever underhanded stuff that you're doing. And then when it comes to blocking, doing your assignment, I'm going to block you all the way through the whistle. I'm going to block you out through the end zone. When you have a guy like that, do you feel it on the team that elevate the group? Is that extremely important? And can you, you know, we'll just say it, OU didn't feel like they had that last year. That culture wasn't quite there. Do you feel like one guy can really have an impact in that department?
100%. And let me tell you this, it impacts both sides of that scenario. Here's what I mean by that. Number one, and by the way, name comes to mind to me immediately, my teammate, Stocker McDougal. Stocker McDougal was not playing no games. Big, strong, fast, first round draft pick, Detroit Lions. He played, I think, 10 years in the league, and he had a successful league. He was successful in the league as well. But he was just one of those guys where, you know, imagine you're in the huddle and you're, I don't know, Sawchuk. And Sawchuk's like, man, that Packer, you know, whatever, right? He went a little too hard on the play. You know, again, sometimes when we played against North Carolina my junior year, I played two games that season. On punt returns, they were doing a little too much. They were going through the whistle, trying to hurt me, squeeze me, pinch me, like weird stuff, right? Like, bro, who pinches? Like, you know, that was something I never experienced as an athlete 3 years of college football. These guys are like trying to squeeze me. You feel me? Like, what are you doing, bro? That's weird, right? But at the same time, guess what? It was kind of a distraction. You know, I'm like, ref, sure. Hey, man, the dude is, you know, dude is pinching me. Tell him to stop. So imagine you're Sawchuk and you're in the huddle. And Sawchuk's like, man, that, you know, that backer had a little extra sauce. TCU last year, a little extra sauce. K-State has done it in the past, right? A little extra sauce. And Savion Bird is like, which one? Man, you know, number 11 or whatever, whatever. By the way, this is literal conversations we had in the huddle. I would be like, Stock, I need you to go hit that backer, you know what I'm saying, across the chin. Like, and here's the deal, Barry. If Savion just oozes this to me, I don't know this, but I believe it. Stock's the guy who, if that wasn't his assignment, Stock's going to go do his assignment. And on the way back to the huddle, hey, man, leave my little guys alone. If not, you got to see me. By the way, he's saying it on the way to the back to the huddle. Savion gives me that energy, right? He gives me the energy of a guy who like, hey, bro, it's us against them. You know what I'm saying? If you ain't rocking with us, dog, I don't got no energy for you. You got to see me. And that, here's what it does. There's three pieces to the puzzle. Piece number one, you in a huddle feeling good, like, dang, my O-line got my back. You know what I'm saying? And so you feel good, like, hey, he got me. I got to go make a play. I got to go do something. Hey, and hype would be the guy looking at you like, Mackie, you going to make a play? Fake, you going to make a play? What's up, Q? You going to make a play? Like, you know, you could kind of see that harness happens. And I feel like Jackson kind of has that moxie to him. We'll see if Dylan has it. Dylan didn't exert a bunch of that last season, but maybe this year he's more comfortable in year two. I hear he's having a phenomenal camp. Maybe he does. So that's part one. Part two is the defense hears it. Yo, who's buddy? And two, there'll be two reactions, right? Reaction one is they get put in a place and all of a sudden they on alert worried about Bird coming to go find them. Oh man, you know, and boom, they're out of their zone. Reaction number two is, hey man, F you got me messed up. By the way, that's us against Nebraska. That's us against K-State. There was a lot of chirping going on when we played those guys in the 2000 season. Respect to them. Obviously, we know who won those games, but respect to them because they did not back down, right? So on defense, there is a possibility you get somebody like Bird to go out there and do that. Now, that backer may not be excited about coming into that B gap if Bird is uncovered. May not be excited about that combo block and him releasing and coming to seal the edge or coming to seal a gap, right? So that also is a piece that helps. But number three, it makes the cream rise to the top, man. Football is a game where you want everybody at their best. You really do want, you know, it's those games where everybody's playing hard are the games where no one generally gets hurt. Those games are the ones where, right, like the game itself decides the score. You're not waiting or hoping for a PI or some kind of ancillary thing to happen to dictate the direction of the game. The better team generally wins. And so, man, having someone like Savion on the team, and he's got to stay motivated. He's got to stay consistent. You know, we got to see what happens. School starting and distractions with class and girls and potential success and all that stuff, if it's going to go to his head, it's all a part of the equation. But you're right. When you got a Orlando Brown Jr. who's got a little bit of that in him, you know what I'm saying? It makes a difference. When you got a Savion Bird, who's, and here's what it also does, and I want to make sure I say this, and I'll pass it back to you. It creates a lineage. Someone is going to see Savion be that guy, wear that hat, and be like, yo, when Savion gone, I got to take on the torch. I got to carry the torch. One thing I was very proud of, I would say my proudest accomplishment as a Sooner receiver, was we created a very high standard for how we worked. We were not the most talented unit. I would still to this day argue that the 03-04 unit is the most talented unit to ever come through OU as a unit. From 1 to 5, those five dudes, Mark Clayton, Mark Bradley, Travis Wilson, Rankins, and Willie Peoples. Like, and by the way, Brandon Jones, there's a ton of them. Those ballers, first rounder, 2 third-rounders, you know what I'm saying? You know, go and then of course Trav came out, I believe was a 3rd-rounder too the year after. So I am always excited to be like, man, they develop our habit. Like we didn't miss times. You weren't allowed to hang with us if you missed times in the summer. So that, you know, Schmitty loved us. You weren't allowed to hang with us if you didn't know how to do your job and know why everybody's job was important. We wouldn't hang with you. You were not allowed to hang with us if you were hot dog and our ego guy. Like you were like, I'm better than everybody. You weren't allowed to hang with us. And you saw a more talented version of us come, a couple years after. It's good to see the O-line today is going to have the opportunity to create that culture. And Caden Green is here. Sexton is healthy and here, right? Taylor, those guys are coming up and they're sniffing that. Remember, I always talk about sniffing that residual impact and what that means. I expect, you know, and I'm cautiously optimistic about the offense in general. My biggest concern or question mark on offense is Dylan Gabriel, followed closely by the receivers, who we also hear is having a solid camp, both Dylan and the receivers. But I expect us to score. Consistently score. I expect us to move the ball and run when we want to and play action off of that and make big plays.
Yeah, and just to kind of run down the offensive line real quick for those who might be more casual fans, maybe not keeping up with what happened in the offseason, right? Some of the changes, some of them are pretty big, so hopefully most Sooner fans know, but you got Tyler Guyton out there at right tackle. Looks like he is, you know, really excelled in this offseason, really taken to the strength program. Looks like a different athlete. I mean, in terms of his body type, he looks like a guy who's ready for NFL snaps. You've got Matower at right guard, Caden Matower, who played last season. Andrew Rame, obviously, there's going to, you know, be other guys who, you know, want to compete for that job. You've got Troy Everett. You've got Nate Anderson. Hearing some good things in that department. Left guard. And this might end up being one of the strengths of the team when you go to that left side. You're going to have Bird and Rouse out there sealing off the left tackle. Really sounds like the offensive line is gelling. But another piece of that O-line, D-Mac, that in Levy's offense was really crucial to the run game in terms of sealing some of the edge, being out there as a lead blocker, was kind of that H-back tight end position. And it doesn't seem like they've necessarily got a Braden Willis in the room. They did acquire an Austin Stogner, and all signs, I mean, he really looks pretty healthy running through stuff. Does he have the same kind of, you know, athleticism that he did in his first stint at Oklahoma? We'll really need to see it. I would say from some of the stuff I've seen, it's not too far off. It's probably a little different, but he's still got a little bit of burst. He's got some nice, he's never been a super athlete in terms of, you know, jumping out of the gym. He's not going to look like a Cade McIntyre, right, in terms of running routes or doing stuff like that. But he's kind of the Jokic, right? Slow-moving guy who somehow creates space, who's able to, you know, box a guy out, get a pass, and has good hands, right? Able to essentially outreach everybody else, use his body in a good way to catch passes, and he'll be a threat in the red zone. But who underneath him, behind him, is going to be able to spell him for those, you know, 15, 20 snaps so he doesn't have to play the whole game? Is there anybody out on the streets, right? So you've got Blake Smith, who was the, I believe, the Texas A&M transfer, who caught the touchdown in the spring game. But I mean, I look at him. He looks like a guy who's, you know, obviously he's playing D1 football, solid athlete, but can he contribute at Oklahoma the way that OU wants production out of that position? Right. So I just don't know. I don't know if I see it. Obviously, we've had Caden Helms here, Jason Llewellyn. They've all kind of struggled through the injuries. So what are you seeing at that spot, D-Mac? You know, OU's obviously added Devon Mitchell in the recruiting cycle. Huge, yep. huge addition. Probably going to see snaps as a freshman in the SEC. Grading out that position, given your outlook, what are your thoughts?
By the way, you're going to love this answer. And I'm going to keep it short and sweet. Stockton is going to be a great inline tight end for us. For him to want to come home after what he went through and then the transition with Link and then going to the SEC and playing with our ex-quarterback, I guess we'd call him, you know, and then coming back, you know, it means something to him. I'm guesstimating here, but you don't come back to OU unless you really loved it, right? And so the opportunity presents itself. He stays healthy. He's going to have a great year. He's not going to look like, the kid from last year. He's not Willis. He's not that kid. He's not Flowers or any of those guys, but he is your prototypical inline tight end. And then he's a vet. He's played a ton of football. He played well in the SEC. I think a year after the major injuries, like you said, he's going to be closer to what he could potentially be, and he'll help us. Now, outside of that, I was going to bring up the A&M kid. We're going to see about the kid who comes from Aledo, Llewellyn, right? He's been around the program a couple years now. That's a huge question mark in terms of depth behind Stogner. But you want to hear what the real depth is behind him?
Who?
Gavin Freeman. That gives Gavin Freeman an opportunity to get a lot more snaps and not step on Drake's toes. I guarantee you, guys, the little H position came when Leach was with us, 99. Brandon Daniels played little H. We'd sub out Seth Luttrell. We'd bring in Brandon Daniels. And then it was kind of like a 50-50 split. Q was a true freshman, so Seth would stay in sometimes because he was a better blocker. So it worked out, right? We were able to create sub packages where Seth was an F sometimes, he was an H sometimes, and then sometimes when Seth was an F, Brandon was an H, and they could both be on the field, and then sometimes you'd have Q on the field as a pup. It's going to happen with the Y position. There's a big Y and there's a little Y. And so there are going to be opportunities for us to even be in potentially a two-back with three receivers. Receivers, and the third receiver is actually the little Y, right? There's going to be an opportunity for us to be an 11 personnel, which the one tight end is a little Y. There are going to be times where we're going to be in 10 personnel. All right. We'll have four wide receivers and one back in that backfield. And I think you play to your strength. You know, again, I've given you credit everywhere, right? I've given you credit here and on the 360 stuff. I've given you credit on Twitter. You called Gavin out. By the way, I want my credit for Caleb. I want my credit for Hicks because Hicks is going to be a man child out there.
He's going to be a dog.
But you called out Gavin after that. I think it was the first time he touched the ball, he scored a touchdown, and you were like, yo, I broke down the film and there's something there. Like, that was not a fluky play, if I remember correctly. And he's had the best camp of the guys. BV said he had the best camp at receivers. Reggie said he's unguardable. I've talked to other players who are like, Justin Harrington was like, Mackie, I have not seen him lose a rep all year. So that's a guy you got to find a way to get him on the field. And it makes a perfect segue. If you don't have a lot of depth at Y, you've got Stogner who can play a good inline. Stogner's going to run some ugly digs and he's going to run some corners. He's going to run that levels, right? The running back in the flat, the tight end in the corner, and then the receiver's coming on a slant behind that or behind the flat route where you read the corner and you throw where he isn't. Staple of our offense for years. He's gonna score a TD or two in the red zone, right? Power pass or whatever. Zone read and option route. He's gonna do that for us. He's gonna hit the seam. He is. We're gonna run action. Backer's gonna bite and he's gonna be right behind him. And Stog's a big strong guy with long arms. He's gonna catch those. He just may not take it 80. But when he's not in, I'm just telling you, and I don't even think it's a rotation. I think it's Gavin. I think Gavin is like the little Y, and then he'll be a sub package H sometimes, a sub package Z sometimes. He probably doesn't play X very often unless there's some one-on-one stuff they see in a week that they want. But Gavin's going to get a ton of reps, and not having a ton of depth at tight end gives him the opportunity to be pushed to the forefront to do that. So I expect Gavin to probably be top four in catches on the year. I would not be surprised if he was top three. I really wouldn't. And so kudos to you. Kudos to him. Kudos to his friend, his dad, who was a teammate of mine. I look forward to seeing a young man have a phenomenal season. And I don't think I'm the first one, or you were the first, but I don't think me name dropping him now is, you know, crimson colored glasses. The kid balled out. He deserves it. And I look forward to seeing him reap the benefits.
Yeah. And I mean, great segue, D-Mac. Almost like you know what you're doing, man. We're obviously a little more talented at receiver, just in terms of the top to bottom, positional grades. And looking there, man, you've got obviously Gavin Freeman, Jahlil Farouk comes back. All signs point to he has really improved his game. That there were areas last year we were able to finally see some of that shake that he has, right? We compared it to a guy like Mark Clayton at times. It just that kind of close area shiftiness to be able to create separation, some good open field stuff. You know, maybe if there were a few more guys on the offense to focus on, maybe he's isolated a little more and can win some of those and go for the bigger gains. But going to see improvement there, I would imagine. Drake Stoops has been a mainstay. And then Andrell Anthony did a video on him on 360. I will say this, the speed of him is real. Can he develop kind of the technical aspect to be a major, major contributing wide receiver in Lebby's offense? We'll kind of wait and see on that. And then you've got your Gavin Freemans. Your Brennan Thompson is going to be an interesting story. LV Bunkley Shelton has been around there. So I know he's had kind of high praise here and there. And then, you know, we've talked about him a bunch. Nick Anderson, a player who last bowl season, I believe it was receiving high, high, high praise, is really one of the best guys out there. Kind of like his brother, is he going to be able to stay healthy? Is he going to be able to? I'm really, really excited to see him play, just in terms of how he moves and what he's got to offer in that regard. But man, you're a former receiver in the college game. You see this group, just talked about Gavin, but running down the list of everybody else, is there maybe a guy that OU fans should expect to surprise? Is that group going to be overall improved from a season ago? And if so, how much improvement do you actually expect?
I think the surprise is Pettaway. I think Pettaway may have the highest ceiling on the entire receiver core. I think you split that down the middle with Anderson. I think Anderson is an exact mirror of his brother, who, just think about it. Rodney Anderson was good enough to go down as one of the greatest backs in Sooner history if he's healthy. He had one of the very best seasons, and it was only like the last seven games, right? K was hurt the first couple games of that season and then dominated. Insane. I think that was 17 or 18, whatever year it was. So two names that people I think are going to really find as household names are going to be Pettaway and Anderson. In fact, we talked about this a little, but man, if you're talking about what's your dream scenario, it's Anderson at the X, 6'3 and up. Polished receiver, catches with his hands, great after the catch. And you can run, you know, again, the X receiver needs to run the slant, the fade, the comeback, the curl. Like those are the four routes that you really, the team's going to be depending upon you to win, right? That's the kind of body style you want in that position. Then you move to the Z in Pettaway. Now, you talked about Anthony, who's probably a Z. I don't think he has the close area quickness that Pettaway has, just that natural, shaky and explosion. He has the speed. He's going to kill us. He's going to kill defenses with action. Oh, safeties, play cover four and have the safeties robbing and have that Z running a deep in cut, running away from the corner who's trying to stay over the top. Stay over the top. He's going to run by you, and that safety is going to be in the box or at 12, and that post is going to kill him. But Pettaway is just a guy who 2 years down the road, he's just one of those guys who's probably a first round draft pick caliber player. When you look at his body, when they just show the pictures, I mean, the way he's put together, he does not look like he's a kid fresh out of high school. He looks like he's a guy who's been in a program for 2 years. And the word that I'm hearing is that he's just got it. Anthony's fast. He's going to be competitive. He's going to be a player. And by the way, Anthony may be the dude this year. Pettaway may not be ready. But your dream scenario is you've got Anderson, and then you've got guys like Gibson as a 1B right at the X position, another 6'4"-esque receiver who they're saying is having a better camp. And then the Z position is Pettaway and Anthony. That allows you to put a guy like Farouk in the slot where he should be, where he can be a yak guy. By the way, he was probably our best jet sweep guy on the team last year, right? And a guy who in the quick screens and the bubble screens and the tunnel screens, like, he's a guy who you want to get the ball in his hands quick and let him go make stuff happen. And then, of course, you're just looking at a Farouk in that H position, and then Drake is in the H and Y position, and then Gavin is kind of like YHZ. That, I think, is a dream scenario. I don't know that it shakes out that way. I think right now Farouk is still a Z, in fact, right? So I think his job is one guys have to earn and take from him anyway. But I'm going to be honest with you, B. I'm going to still say I'll believe it when I see it. I want to see these guys make the plays. I was bored the other day, and I was watching OU YouTube videos, and it was just amazing to me how many times CeeDee Lamb, Marquise Hollywood, Joe Mixon, Samaje Perine, you know what those guys did? They took 13, 15-yard plays, and they took them to the house. We haven't had that type of player make plays like that in a while. By the way, during my run, we did it a ton. And the crew, I mean, the Mark Clayton crew, those guys, forget about it, because they were in a scheme that was way before its years with NFL dudes, a ton of them. I mean, those guys, you know, Jason White cleaned up. I want to see this group take a 13-yard curl to the house. I want to see this group catch a quick slant, shake the safety in the hole, and split the high safeties. I want to see this group, somebody just run a fade and run away from the corner. And so that is my concern. That is, I wouldn't call it an issue, but that's my wait and see. Do I think talent-wise, you know, you lose Mims, who's a big-time guy, with all respect to him, but let's keep it a buck. Mims was not a complete receiver. He just wasn't. He was a great, very explosive. He was good at what he was good at. And I'm gonna take nothing away from him, but we need to get back to CeeDee Lamb, Mark Clayton, Ryan Broyles, Sterling Shepard. I mean, we've had a cachet of receivers who will beat you on third and short, who will catch that third and medium when you need it, who will catch that double cover post when the game's on the line. We need that guy again. And I'm looking forward to see who that individual could be. The beauty is, Barry, we've got options. We've got tall ones. We've got explosive ones. We've got jitterbugs. We've got kind of your standard, ooh, that guy looks like he's exactly what that position is supposed to look like. We'll see which one of those guys step up.
Man, one of my favorite plays, you know, you kind of talk about just being able to win. And, you know, shout out to Kyle, who's got a good article on the quarterback position over on 360 right now. I recommend you guys go check it out. Really just digs into the data. You know, the quarterback is a very data heavy position. You know, when you go to look at where guys are, you know, accurate on the field, where they're not, what guys are doing on first down as opposed to second, third, and fourth. And, you know, one of my favorite plays by an OU receiver, and I think I've talked about it, and really highlights why having a player who is just talented and can go win is so important. And even though OU ultimately did not win this game, it really highlights what that means to a team and to an offense. Is I want to say it was like 3rd and 6 against Georgia in 17. And OU's on, I think they're on the right hash. CD has all of this space, and he sees that he's single covered. There's no deception. There's no DMAC. He waves both hands in the air. Make sure Baker sees him, and then he runs that quick little slant, gets to the sticks and it's a first down. And what would you say that Mims was capable of being that guy a year ago?
I think Mims was more of a guy who was schemed into the plays that he was going to find success. I've said it a ton on this deal, and I didn't see it. When I watched his film, I thought he was going to be an intermediate guy. He's not. He's a guy who's most successful when he's either, you know, it's interesting. He had a lot of success playing X. Go back and watch the film. He's opposite the tight end where you can ISO, right? Or he's in the slot and he's splitting the defense. He's running against safeties because he can overwhelm you with his speed once he gets going. That's not a guy that you're talking about where the DB has to play him honest, right? If you've got Mims on your side, let me just tell you, like for instance, if I'm a safety and Mims is on my side, here's what I do. First things first, I cheat 2 feet back. Okay, that hurts us in the run game a step. I cheat another foot over him, right? Because I want to kill angles of him running away from me, right? But if I see Mims not charge off the line of scrimmage, I take my eyes off of him because he's not a guy like a CeeDee Lamb who can route himself open. He's going to run to the scheme and run the daylight, or he's going to be 1v1 opposite the tight end and it's 10 versus 10 and it's 1-on-1 on that side of the field and, you know, get a split away from the tackle and see what he can do. That's easier to scheme up versus a totally versatile guy who, I mean, like just Ryan Broyles, Mark Clayton, Sterling Shepard, and CeeDee Lamb. Those four dudes, they could kill you with a quick screen just as fast as they killed you with a slant, just as fast as they could catch a curl and take it to the house, just as fast as they'd run right by your ass and score on a fade. All four of them did it different ways. I mean, Broyles is probably a 4-5-5 guy. Didn't matter. His spatial awareness, his close proximity quickness, and his ability to just play ball, defenses could never just play him honest. They had to cheat, and then that gives an advantage to the offense.
Man, that is why this podcast is so good. That's such good stuff, D-Mac. That's interesting. Let's fill out the last two spots here real quick, and then we'll probably get out of here today, man. Running back position, we'll obviously finish with quarterback. Last year, really in the last game, you got to see Gavin Sawchuk for the first time. And to Sooner fans, Damian Mackey, he did not disappoint. You saw the burst. That was a little different than what Barnes was offering in terms of, you know, breaking the tackles and then separating from the defense. He had some nice runs that went for scores, which is something that we felt was missing from the offense. A good chunk of the season. You had Gray, you know, breaking off some nice chunk plays every now and again, but not anything that just bust it wide open and go for the TD. You saw that with Chuck. I was a bit surprised at how much he had gained from a strength standpoint. He did not look like the same athlete coming out of high school. That was obviously a plan in terms of redshirting him, having him focus on the lifting, having him focus on getting his body right. He needed to develop there more than Barnes did. And you're seeing it now. People don't realize that man, when you are playing in a season, the workload has got to be different when it comes to the strength training. And now that Barnes has really had a killer couple off seasons now, you're seeing even his body change. He's the kind of guy who looks like he can go play in the NFL. The body looks great. But Sawchuk was a guy who impressed. Barnes really saw more snaps during the season, was pretty consistent, but I think fans expect a little bit more of him this season. You know, were there a few more tackles that he could have broken? What was there, you know, some assignment soundness that probably could have been a little better? And then OU's got some other guys, man. They've got the McCown kid who has just really been lights out and has gotten a lot of praise from the staff. You've got your Tawi Walkers. Trying to think if I'm missing anybody who should be obvious. You've got, oh yeah, Caleb Hicks in a couple of the highlights. Mr. D-Mac has nailed it in that regard. So D-Mac, looking at the running back spot, man, is there anybody, kind of same question to the receiver position, who is going to surprise, who is going to give the staff a reason to play them? And does that group, because of the offensive line, see massive improvement and really impact the offense as a whole?
You know, it's interesting, B. I believe this is what I believe. I believe there'll be a running back by committee. I believe coach will put all of them in a position where every day they're competing for reps. And I think it's very healthy. We don't have a guy who has bona fide earned it. Barnes took the most reps. Barnes was a guy who consistently found people to tackle him, unfortunately, but he was a pup. He looks good, explosive. I went back and watched his high school film and just watched how dynamic he was. He had a phenomenal O-line. But I think he's going to be one of the first guys up. Sawchuk came in during the bowl game and gave us something we had not seen in 2 years, 3 years. Like, damn, there is, you know, our offense has not forgot how to just split guys and take it to the crib. He did that, I think, twice in that game. One got called back. And so I think that is a skill set he possesses that it can't go unnoticed. And so he's another guy who will have the opportunity to consistently get reps. You didn't bring up Marcus Major. Everybody wants to stop bringing up Marcus Major. I want to continue to say Marcus Major because the word that I keep hearing is Marcus Major is a factor. Okay. He's been injured and, you know, he hasn't taken advantage of all his reps, but this staff sees something in him, and I'm just telling you guys, he's going to get reps. So we'll see what happens. If he can stay healthy, expect to see him get his fair share. You brought up Tawee. The kid is essentially a hell on wheels. No one likes to tackle him. He's going to fight you for every yard. And I mean, he's a guy who apparently also is doing well in pass pro, which means he will potentially get reps. I think I told you guys this a week and a half ago. McCown is surprising. The name that, and it was kind of disrespectful to me. Like, come on, bro, don't just throw that name out because kid had one cute little scrimmage, like a cute scrimmage, and we throwing out Quentin Griffin. Don't do that. But the name Quentin Griffin came out from a firsthand source who says, "Hey, I'm just letting you know there's some cute there." And so, I don't know that he's going to get 50 carries or 100 carries, but I believe he's a guy early in the season who he's going to surprise some people against a Tulsa or an SMU, assuming, you know, those games we at Archie State, we were ahead and they're going to get guys getting reps. But I don't believe there's a bona fide alpha. And I believe that's going to be the rally cry from DeMarco, from Lebby and BV. Hey, dude, you got to earn it every day. And I was a product of that. I was a product of my freshman year. It was like, and I was kind of honored. Like, if JJ had a bad week, I was starting. And he was a senior and I was a freshman. My sophomore year was me and Jay Norm every day. And so every rep mattered. Every plus minus mattered. I believe the running backs are going to be in that type of predicament where you're just unafforded. I don't know if that's a real word, but you're just not afforded to be lackadaisical. All that said, Barnes could come out and have two 200-yard plus games week zero, week one, and there it is, right? He's getting 75% of the carries. But I think as it stands right now, those guys are going to get chances. I didn't even bring up mine. I didn't bring up Caleb. Caleb's having a phenomenal summer, and they believe he could be an alpha down the road. So still got to pick up the blitz pickup and awareness and how to satellite correctly and listening to the O-line and going to the side that they're man blocking versus zone. You know, he's got to do some things that is going to take time. But he's a guy that they're depending on too. Running back, the cupboard's full. Smothers is back in town. You know what I'm saying? And he's a guy who they believe in a year is going to be lightning in a bottle. Of course, we got the true freshman coming in. Running back cupboard is full. Kudos to DeMarco. What's going to be in important this season is them putting the right hand in the game that's going to be able to make the most out of the plays that are available.
D-Mac, that brings us to one final position. And I mean, Sooner Nation at this point, I mean, it's almost a running joke with what they think of my take. And we're not going to be disrespectful at all on this podcast. But
speak for yourself.
OU was able to acquire a pretty big name quarterback in the recruiting cycle, a one Mr. Jackson Arnold. Feels like OU finally has a legitimate backup, legitimate two guy to Dylan Gabriel's one. Dylan Gabriel last year. Oh, we got the stuff up on the site. We've got all the numbers. We saw what happened when he went down. It was, well, what would be a word to describe it? when he went down in that Texas game, or really TCU, and then didn't play against Texas.
Devastating. It was devastating. It was definitely devastating.
That being said, in the games against premier opponents, really your TCU early on, and I say premier, it was really teams that had a pulse on defense. Your West Virginias, which was, you know, bad weather. Your Baylors, who, you know, it's Dave Aranda. They're going to be sound. They're going to do a lot of good stuff on defense. They're going to confuse you. 154 passer rating. And let me put that into perspective. And I'm not saying that he needs to be Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield was in the 190s. Your Jalen Hurts was a mid-upper 180s guy. Yes, it was a different offense. I get that. Kyler Murray, not even going to run down that route because he was kind of a specimen all his own. His ability to run really made him be able to play more freely, be smarter with the ball because he knew he could always take off. If it wasn't there, he didn't need to risk it. So Baker is probably the more apt comparison. And I think the biggest thing that was posted in the article was third down and fourth down, I believe it was, a 111 passer rating, went all the way down from, I want to say it was in the 150s, 160s on first and second, which is solid. But at the end of the day, that's average by national standards, right? That's not going to necessarily win you a championship. The receivers needed to improve. The offensive line needed to improve. Does that put OU over the hump? If Dylan Gabriel, let's say he just has a slight uptick in performance, is that enough to get OU to a conference championship? Probably so, right? If everything else improves and the defense is able to get off the field on third down, not allow more plays than any other team in college football, that will probably help the team as a whole. Looking at this position, DMAC, looking at where OU stands today, really, we're going to leave Booty and Bevel. They're really out of this discussion. This is a two-horse race. Dylan Gabriel, Jackson Arnold. We know Dylan's starting. We know that Dylan is going to get the large lion's share of the snaps and probably see most of the snaps in fall camp, especially as they get down to the end with the ones. What do you see out of this position group? And I will leave it at that.
I'm going to make a comparison. In 2003, we recruited the number one running back in the country named Adrian Peterson. The 2004, I guess it was 2004, February of 2004. That fall, we had a returning starter in Kewon Jones, who was a guy who over the course of three seasons had played his tail off. In fact, remember, there was a time where Kewon was our short yardage running back. And by the way, he scored a ton of TDs as the short yardage running back, right? But level with me. In 04, you recruit a guy by the name of Adrian Peterson, and you Kewon has earned the right to get carries. You don't just demote a Kewon Jones who's been in the program. I think he came in, I believe he came in 01, right? So this is his year in the program. You can't just say, hey man, you know, AD's AD, you're gonna ride the pine. So what did they do? They created packages for AD and made sure he got his carries, and they respected Kewon because he was a team guy for 4 years. I expect the exact same thing to happen this year. Jackson Arnold can just do things Dylan can't. Dylan's having a great camp, so we hear. He's running well. He looks explosive. The ball's popping off his hands. But again, it's like comparing, I don't know, Brock Purdy to Josh Daniels. You know what I'm saying? Like, or what's his name? Is that
Josh Allen?
Josh Allen. I'm sorry. I'm trying to
right. Buffalo guy.
Yeah, you go. Sorry, I'm a Niner guy.
Right, you got the New York guy. You put what's his name? Daniels up in Daniel Jones.
Merged the two. There it is.
Josh Allen, though. Josh Allen.
But right, Brock Purdy on his best day is not going to be Josh Allen. On his best day. By the way, 49ers could win a championship with Brock Purdy, potentially, right? But Josh Allen's a difference maker. He's just a different dude. The ball, the way he runs the ball, the way he throws the ball, the things he can do with the ball, and the way the defenses have to prepare for him. Dillon Gabriel is a guy who we learned last season defenses can play straight up and expect defensive ends to, in their regular package, contain him, to expect linebackers in the flat to beat him to the spot, right? And so that is something that defenses will be able to stay very true to form so long as he's in the game. And as the level of competition increases, it's a comfortable feeling for DCs and head coaches to have that in their back pocket. Jackson Arnold, on the other hand, is a bigger today, right now. Why they show pictures on the OU football Twitter site yesterday. Jackson Arnold's bigger, he's longer, he's thicker, and the ball travels with more velocity and farther distances when he has it. He also is more explosive, short area quickness, and is a threat to get to the second level of the defense and potentially run away from, or at least not get caught by linebackers, like today. So here's what I think, and I don't have any intel, Barry, but I firmly believe Dillon's a guy who they're going to give 75% of the reps in the first two or three games. And let me tell you what I think Lebby's going to do. Lebby's going to try to score 50 as fast as possible. That way he has an excuse to say, Dillon, you're done. But in reality, he's getting Jackson more reps, right? The defense is going to be told, hey, dude, don't give up big plays. Let's win third downs. Let's see if we can win the turnover margin early in the season. Let's get that momentum and kind of get Lady Luck on our side early. Why? Because they want to give Jackson an opportunity to get quality reps. There is no way in heaven Brent Venables goes into the SEC season next year with a quarterback who's wet behind the ears. He's just not going to do it. It doesn't make any sense at all. And so we as Sooner fans, I mean, there's a bunch of things, right? There's a bunch of variables or ingredients that have to work out. The defense has to be substantially more stout. They got to win third down. Like you said, I think our defense was on the field the longest out of every defense in America.
Everybody. Bad at run and bad at pass.
That's so piss poor. How many third and 14s did we see our defense give up? So the defense has to be more stout and more opportunistic. Their line has to be able to open holes, and we need to be able to run when we need to. The running backs need to bump their head on the goalpost a few more times. I don't think we had a ton of 30, 40, 50-yard touchdowns, even against the Sisters of the Poor Handkerchief University A&Ts. Like, I don't think we had a ton of those last year. We had some big plays in the passing game, but we didn't have very many. Sachuk was the most explosive running back we saw all year. So those things happen, and you marry that with the opportunity for Jackson to get his reps. And I don't wish anything negative on Dillon, but it'll be interesting to see if he stays healthy the entire season. Just his build, the amount of, he's the trigger man. He's going to be the point guard. So he's going to be throwing the ball a ton. He's going to be running the ball some. He's going to be asked to move defenders with his eyes, or, you know, with some of the pre-snap stuff they're doing. Sometimes we're going to guess wrong, and there's going to be a guy who's free, or there's going to be a man there, and we'll see. You know, I'm knocking on wood because I want him to be successful, but just over the course of 12, 13, 14, 15 potential games, I imagine there's going to be a series or a game like last season, right? We had two or three games where Dillon wasn't able to play. Like you said, that depth that will be there, but also the opportunity will be there as well. And I expect Jackson to play well. I was a huge fan of his before we even recruited him. I said he's got that Baker Mayfield kind of moxie leadership to him. And I think he's in a way being a respectful teammate, and not really, I think he's holding back. I think he's holding back his personality. Mark my words, and I'll go on the record and say this today. When he's our starting quarterback, I have a feeling he's going to have a flair to him that we just don't see yet. So we'll see if he's kind of a reserved guy by nature, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know that he'll be Baker, but I feel like there's some part of, you know what, it's not my turn yet. I'll respect Dillon, but give me an opportunity. I expect him to give it his best shot, and based on his talents, I expect him to be successful.
I think that will be one of the more interesting storylines, not in the terms of a guy taking a job, you know, in non-conference, but just in terms of how many snaps does he see? Is OU able to separate from your Archie States, from your Tulsas, right? From your, you know, when they play Cincinnati to open in conference play, Cincinnati, a team that's been depleted, lost their coach. Can they you know, get Jackson Arnold on the field. We've talked about it. He's a five-star quarterback. His trajectory is first-round NFL pick. It doesn't mean that he becomes that guy. A lot of work to be done between now and then. D-Mac, that's a full look at the offense. I don't know if any other podcast has given you guys the breakdown like that. Before we get out of here today, man, we would really hurt Sooner Nation's feelings if we just didn't give overall thoughts on this whole Winery situation and the way things went down and just where OU moves on from here. It was an interesting situation. A lot of people had Winery going to Oklahoma until the final hour, right? Yeah, you had Fong out there. He dropped his forecast, his prediction for Mizzou. And I guess maybe this is another kind of broader discussion on NIL and youngsters being offered, you know, various amounts of money with different schools and who can play ball, who has to find the resources to be able to take care of other five-star talents, you know, who they are also recruiting, right? Guys who also want to have those assets at their disposal when they arrive to their respective university. So just your quick thoughts on the whole situation and what it means, where OU goes from here, and then we'll bounce out of this one today.
Hey, man, it's the game we play. All these universities are chasing 17-year-old men, and the game has been, you know, there's been a cheat code added, and with this NIL stuff happening, NIL is changing the games and has given, you know, universities the opportunity to throw money, legitimately throw money legally at players. And I'm not saying that necessarily in this situation as it was the end all be all, but, you know, based upon the rumors that were out and a lot of the stuff that was, you know, being, I don't know if it was like super public information, but, you know, $750K from Mizzou. And then apparently, you know, there's a rumor that they were offering $1 million. Here's what I'll say. Families have to make financial decisions that are best for them. But there's short term and there's long term. And the William Numeri, I don't know how to say his last name correctly. I was a math teacher.
Winery, as
I'll say. I just don't know if long term taking, I get it, the bird in the hand versus two in the bush, but taking that money means what it says to me, and this isn't sour grapes, but it says like, I may not want to put in the work to go where I want to go, because the NFL, that his position is a $15,000 to $20,000 a year position if you play well. And the two best options for him, if that were his option, are Georgia or Oklahoma. And so $1 million, though, to a family who, I mean, that's life-changing income.
It's a lot of money.
I imagine it's something that's, yeah, I imagine it's annual. You know what I'm saying? So 2-3 years down the road, you know, what does that look like? But I'll say this, you know, recruiting is a gig where a lot of people are putting their asses on the line and trusting the word of children. These guys are still adolescents. They're not adults yet. And it is in their emotions change. And now parents aren't necessarily making a character based decision. Sometimes they're making an economic based decision. And so it's just adding a separate layer where you might feel like you were told the truth. You might feel like this kid or this family told you, this is exactly what I want to do. You might have had, you know what I'm saying, somebody inside the program tell you that this is what they know. And guess what? They don't control things either. And so when these young men make their decisions, the first thing that I'll say is I wish them nothing but the best. I want them to do what's best for them and their families. And kudos to them for being able to leverage whatever NIL is in store for them. But the other part is, as a program, we got to have thick skin. And oh, you took it on the chin, whatever, right? You don't hear a bunch of bitching and moaning coming out of the program. I think guys were cautiously optimistic that this would be a win for us. And this is a key piece, a centerpiece to a change in the perception of how we recruited the defensive position. And I don't believe they're going to stop recruiting the young man, Barry, to be frank with you. Missouri better win 6-7 games. They in the SEC, they better go win 6-7-8 games
where that coaching staff fired.
May not even be there. Right. To even, you know, come through on those promises. So OU is going to continue to recruit. We've got a couple other irons in the fire at that position. We need to win Stone. We need to figure out a way to get McKinley. We need the Nigel kid I think Melissa, Texas, or wherever kid's from. Okoye is a guy who's in Oklahoma's backyard who we've got to be willing to put a fence around our borders and say, you don't get our kids. And so a lot of options out there. It stung, right? I think, you know, it's one of those situations where OU's going to say, when are we going to not be the bridesmaid? Well, we weren't the bridesmaid with Peyton Bowen. And don't forget how his situation ended with him initially picking Oregon and then having a sensible moment with the family and coming to OU. So we're turning the corner, Barry, the third Monday in October. That's going to be a cornerstone date that we will stay, you know, people will respect us as, okay, OU's back, or this might be a little the same that we've seen in the last 3 to 4 years. I'm interested to know, brother, what's your take?
Look, I want to say this. Just the very fact that OU went 6-7, had arguably maybe not the worst defense in the Big 12 statistically, but in a large chunk of games looked like the worst defense in the Big 12. Just eye test, right? The way the linebackers played, the way the defensive line at times played, the way the ends played, it did not look like good football for 6-7, half of the season, right? It was not good football, right? You had teams that you lost to that you should not have lost to, you know. Well, with Missouri, granted that it's that they're in the SEC. And there's a little bit of Missouri. You just kind of know what you're getting if you're a student. You're staying close to home. Your family's going to be right there by you. If the money's crazy and you know, ceiling 7-8 wins and you're okay with that. And some athletes just are. If it means they're staying close to home, right? There's some athletes that, you know, have the opportunity to go to, you know, other big major schools and pick to stay close to home. You don't know what all went into the decision-making. We have a feeling that NIL definitely played a role, but the fact that OU is, you know, you win a Jaden Jackson, right? You Peyton Bowen a year ago, you know, PJ, who didn't see the on-field, it's a little bit different scenario, but coming off of the season that they had, the fact that they are in on so many high-level players and will probably get at least one, should be two or three, but at least one, right, who kind of the big fish left out there. OU's in a good spot. And offensively, they're recruiting lights out. Emmett Jones has been incredible since he's arrived. He's already got commitments from some big-time players who are going to continue to shoot up the rankings. If OU can put a good product out there in really the first 4 to 5 weeks when you see some of those visits taking place, they go to Cincy and, you know, they kick a little ass in that game, I think you might see the tide change. And if OU goes down there, as we've talked about, and they're able to beat Texas, not even necessarily dominate the game, but if they go down there and they show that this is a different team defensively, I think you're going to have an opportunity. You're going to have doors open. Because right now, man, you are battling the person. And you know what other coaches are saying. They're saying, you know, Coach Venables is telling you they're going to be improved, that they're telling you they're going to be this, but you saw them a year ago. The facts are they are not. So until you show that you are what your record is, and you are what the product is on the film. You are what the film says. And they're going to be battling that. Obviously, they're battling it with Georgia and Alabama, who are perennial powerhouses. But even Missouri, right? Missouri can say, you know, how much worse were we than they were, right? And that's an easy thing to do right now. So however unfortunate it was, you got to move on. You got to take your lumps, take it on the chin, figure out a different way to go. And I think Gerald McCoy had a tweet of, you know, a lot of players have come to OU on the defensive line who weren't, you know, high-level guys who ended up being very, very productive players who contributed to championships. And I think it was a great point. He was like, when the mentality for OU gets back to we will win with you or without you, either way, that's when your program gets back to where it needs to be. Because that's Alabama's mantra. That's Georgia's mantra. If whether or not you come here, we're still going to win as a program. DMAC, awesome show today, man. Any kind of sounding off thoughts for Sooner Nation as we get out of here today?
Just get my mind right for the season, man. We too close for comfort and a bunch of rah-rah, man. You know, looking forward to continuing to see these guys improve and stay healthy. And, you know, just cheering those guys on. I hate that I'm not going to be in Norman. They're having the alumni barbecue and scrimmage this weekend. I'll be in Atlanta on business, and so I won't get a chance to be there to take a look at the guys for myself. But I'll be in town soon and looking forward to taking in the Crimson and Cream and seeing how the squad looks like for the 23-24 season.
Great stuff. And Sooner Nation, we'll be bringing you some previews. I have some writers of Arkansas State, TU, some Big 12 guys, obviously the Sikkim 365 guys. We know them. They're going to be contributing as we get into conference, you know, appearing on the show, giving us some insight into the other squads. A lot of that coming here on the Barry and Mac Show, stuff that no other show offers. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast, follow it, share it, retweet it. We will give you a shout out on the show, right? We did that to, I think, Cheryl. It was a while back. Give us a nice, cool shout out. Retweet. It really helps us grow, as we've said, passion project. Follow the Twitter at Barry and Mac SHW. DMAC is at D underscore Mac 13. You can follow me at B-Wise Fitness, at the letter B, W-I-S-E Fitness. Check out 360, see what we're doing over there. Sooner Nation, thank you for listening today, and we will see you soon.